podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey gang, good news. The Aer Lingus College Football Classic is back in Dublin at the Aviva Stadium this summer. The 24th of August, Florida State, Georgia Tech. I'm going to be there. Propos in the house. We'll get Ben as well. Hey, we might even drag Carlson with us this time. So if you want to be there too, head on over to collegefootballisland.com, collegefootballisland.com. Register interest. You'll be the first in the queue for tickets. We'll see you there. It is a fine Monday, gang. I'll tell you why it's a fine Monday. Two fantastic championship games to look back on. I can't wait to break them down. We've got a full to the brim. Pass the uncavenue mailbag. When don't we, quite frankly, on a Monday? And if that wasn't enough. If that wasn't enough, ladies and gents, I'm Mike Carlson, live and direct from Madrid. Good to see you, man.
Yeah, it's nice to be back in the world of football. I've been doing ice hockey from the Winter Youth Olympics, which is taking place in Korea, but I'm doing the matches that I do from a studio here in Madrid for the Olympic Channel. And last night, watched the matches on TV, not on TV, here on my computer here.
I'm disappointed, in you, Carlson, that you didn't find a prototypical dive bar that you were watching the games at 3 a.m. in Madrid, and you decided to be very responsible and watch it in your hotel room.
I have found that there are dive bars in Madrid, but very few of them are showing the NFL on a Sunday. On a Sunday evening.
Something we need to change, I think, Madrid gang.
But yeah, we need. But they were. You're absolutely right. It was two fascinating games, two really, really good football games, and I think we've got the final that a lot of people might have wanted, and yeah, a little surprising one in some ways. But it was a good weekend. Good weekend for me in many ways, except that Jahmyr Gibbs didn't go over 47 yards rushing, but Marquez Valdes-Scantling went over 13.5 receiving.
So and Valdes-Scantling came good. We called this on edge rush, and this I'm sure will be a key narrative going into Super Bowl 58, but the supporting cast for all the talk of Pacheco and Kelsey and Mahomes and Gore was Valdes-Scantling. That gutsy play call, Valdes-Scantling coming up with a good as well. Let's get into all of that in a bit, because I want to start with the second game first. So many questions in the Pascal Gavini mailbag about it, unsurprisingly. Detroit, tragically, predictably maybe, throwing it all away just when it looked like they had it in the bag. And CJ Gardner-Johnson certainly felt they did when he was waving goodbye to the San Francisco fans. I think that was ill-judged. That's a technical term for CJ doing his shtick. And a lot of focus inevitably is on Dan Campbell and three particular calls, right? The two fourth down calls and the call at the end of the game, the play call at the end when they're in the red zone, he went for a run, swallowed a lot of the clock when they still had time potentially to get themselves back into it. Now, as I say, a lot of brilliant questions from the mailbag. Mark, in particular, I love this, right? So he asked this, Mike, with Dan Campbell's two fourth down decisions of not taking a potential 6 points, examples of bad game management or simply him being him and a reason why Detroit were able to get to where they got to this season. We were chatting pre-show. I made a Western reference about something else. I can't remember what we were talking about. I'm reading Mark's question, Mike. I remember straight away that one of my favorite lines of the Western from the great Leo McGarry, when he says, you got to dance with the one that brung you. Isn't that what the Lions did? They danced with the one that brung them.
Yeah, I think the answer to his question is that it was both, but it was most decidedly Dan Campbell being Dan Campbell. And that's how the Lions had rocked. Interestingly enough, last week in my column, I wrote a long piece about a piece I had read in the New York Times about how coaches were jumping on analytics and going for it on fourth down, which was contradicted by its own graphs and all in terms of jumping onto it. And then gave a long kind of explanation of all the odd kind of how they figured out the odds and blah, 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 ending in a short summary of it's still football and you have to do it. And I saw a breakdown of the possibilities from ESPN, and they were basically in both cases break evens in terms of winning. But the math tells you it's break evens Dan Campbell's senses tell him that he should go for it because his team can make it, and he's going to do it. And my sense tells me that when you're up 24 to 10 and you've just given up a field goal in the third, so you've cut the margin to just two touchdowns, put that field goal back on the board, make it a three-score game. That first one was the one that I found more inexcusable, because to me there's no reason to not put three on the board. The second one, which was in the fourth quarter, I think it was 7.5 minutes to go, more or less. That one, you need two scores. Put the field goal up first, because you're not in a position to get a touchdown from there. And someone said, well, Michael Badgley is, it's Michael Badgley. Michael Badgley hadn't missed a kick for the Lions. He only played four games in the regular season, but he didn't miss a kick in any of them.
But playing devil's advocate for a minute, if the numbers are that close, and we've made the point a number of times on the show, and I think this is very much your point, that analytics can only take you so far. You've got to read the individual and idiosyncratic situation that's unfurling in front of you right now. That combination of players, that moment in the game, all of those factors come into it, right? But if the numbers were pretty even, Stevens, isn't that exactly what Campbell should have done, right? Insofar as, because he's such an emotional leader that from day one, from press conference one, has blazed a call to action, and his guys have gone with him. If he'd gone the other way, he would have been undermining that whole
I agree with
persona.
I understand what you're saying, and I agree with it. And as I said, that's why he went for it. That's his faith. And we've been in that situation, like when Mike Vrabel went for the 2-point conversion to win the game at the end of the game. And I said, yeah, it shows your faith in the team. That's all very true. I'm just saying, from my point of view, that first one to me is automatic in the other direction. I want to make it a three-score game with no risk involved. No one's really criticizing Andy Reid for going for the fourth and short after Kelce's third and whatever it was came up, just short, which all of us thought was a bad
12.
spot, and then we saw the replay that said it actually was an accurate spot. So, but in Andy's case, they were on a roll, and I think that he was going to build that lead, and thought that it was it. So circumstances to me said no, and I perfectly understand it. And honestly, that was not the reason they lost the game. Well, they lost the game because a freak play killed them, and they couldn't make a couple of plays that they needed to make. There was a fumble. There was a drop by Reynolds, which would have been really crucial. And that's the way it really works, because when you see the analytics, I'm never convinced by the probability that includes making it, because making it is not only dependent on the circumstance, and they've got their figures for what teams do on average on fourth and three at this position in the field, and how many points they generate from that. But I just don't trust that number. And so
Campbell
anyway, but
definitely does.
I agree with you completely. I'm
Ask you this about
not
Campbell
blaming Dan Campbell
in a
for all
few
this.
say he comes back in a few years' time, right? And there's a lot of talk that the Lions are building something special. I know a lot of Lions faithful will be hanging their hat on that after the heartbreaking fashion in which they went down. If Campbell's back again in the same situation, does he do the same thing, or is this an example of a relatively inexperienced head coach that will learn from the cuts and bruises?
Interesting question, and I think Dan Campbell will go with his gut. I think that's the way he rides in the game, and they're his decisions. We talked about that. It appears to me that what Dan Campbell does is he tells his coordinators how he wants to win games, what he thinks they should be doing, how they can play complementary, and lets the coordinators do their thing. I don't think he lets them make that decision, because he thinks that's the leader's decision, the head coach's decision, and he's absolutely right in thinking that.
Back to the mailbag, Mike, because like I said, there are some crackers in there. Andy Gildy, Andy makes the same point about the certainly the aggressive play calls, as he calls them, being a feature of the Lions in 2023. But he goes on to talk about the focus that really should be on the woeful, as he describes it, second half collapse of the Lions D. So let's take that. And firstly, do you agree with, was it a Lions defensive collapse? Was it brilliant restructuring and pivoting from Shanahan and the 49ers offense? You mentioned that very jammy play, of course, from the Vildor deflection that went went to Ayuk, which was a lucky break. But that notwithstanding, what went down in the second half in terms of the Shanahan offense and the Detroit D?
Well, it was interesting because they were forced to play more of a drop back passing game. Not, you know, not completely, but obviously the Ayuk play, the deep pass was a straightforward drop back. And they executed better. And I think Purdy, the Detroit rush did better than I thought it would early on, but yeah. Purdy negated some of that with his scrambling. And I think he realized that there was no point in his hanging around, you know, and that's where the San Francisco offense usually breaks down when they're trailing and why they have such difficulty behind. Because when you're not running that basic play action and you have to wait a little bit longer, the pressure comes on and it becomes more difficult for the quarterback. I think it's a worrying thing for San Francisco that they've had trouble early in the last couple of games in establishing that offense, you know, and getting it going. And
why do you think that is, Mike? Why have they struggled?
Well, against Green Bay, people were blaming Purdy's small hands and the rain, things like that. I think it was that in both games, the defense was doing a pretty good job of stopping those early reads and not buying into the play action, getting good reactions from the linebacking core. And I think they adjusted to that in the sense that they sent Anzalone in the wrong direction a number of times, in particular with motion. And like I said, I think that the Niners line started to dominate a bit more. But like the other game, all of our focus is kind of on the offense. And I think their defense played very well in the second half because Detroit had run them crazy in the first half. They had almost 150 yards rushing in the first half. And they got away from that a bit in the second half. And they were throwing the ball more. And Fred Warner had a great game, I thought. The Niners secondary did a pretty good job of controlling that pass game in the second half. And when you break that down, again, you go to, well, it's Laporta. It's kind of like the Chiefs. It's Laporta and it's St. Brown and then the other guys, you know. Mm-hmm. And the guy who stood out in the first half and wasn't quite able to repeat that was Jameson Williams.
Sure, sure.
Who also, you know, had a big game, made a couple of really big plays.
On the 49ers offense for a moment, Matt Barrows, who's a beat writer for the 49ers, made a really good point about a couple of key plays that Purdy made scrambling, running, that at crucial times in the game. And it was, I think, it's either second or third most yards he got on the ground all season. Is that's something we haven't, obviously, if it's second or third, he picked up 40-yard. We haven't seen much of that in Purdy's game. Is that something you think we might see more of? Do you think that's something that Shanahan might tap into a little bit more in
clutch? I doubt that he would run him on design running kind of plays. And the reason we don't see more of it is that the offense isn't designed for that because the offense is running play action most of the time. And so Purdy is usually moving in the pocket and therefore going to dump the ball. When he was scrambling, he was pretty much scrambling out of a pocket,
for his life.
A steady pocket, and did very well at finding an exit point. That was the key thing for him, was to get that exit point, and then ran very well. The second run was more in motion because he took a quick look and then decided he was going to go to the outside, and he ran to the left corner and got, I think, 21 yards on that. But I think that's the reason he doesn't do more, is that basically the system isn't designed for it to let him do that. You know, he's so committed to one move or the other on the play action pass. It's not scrambling. It's not really a thing.
So where are we on Purdy then in this recency bias fast react? There's a good one actually from Cammy Walker. Hey, Cammy, via Insta. Always like a question from Instagram in the past year mailbag, because we are ex-heavy Iron Mike, as you well know. Cammy says, why do I feel like a proud dad when Purdy consistently makes big time plays in big moments? Will Fox and NBC stop talking about how Purdy can't come from behind? So yeah, I mean, it's interesting going driving to the game, and we're watching it with our pals actually at Paseo and Cavani. Shout out to them. Shout out to our Fitstairs crew as well, who kindly hosted us, and Propo in the house, the guru, Benny as well. So it was good fun. We missed you, Mike, but sounds like you were rolling over in Madrid. And in the game, in the drive on the way over, I was listening, catching up with a pod that was just laying in to all the classic Purdy. The small hands thing came out, the limitation, everything came out, all the usual tropes about Purdy came out, but he's had the last laugh once again. What do you make of his performance in total, in all four quarters last night?
He just isn't going to get the hype, is he? And, you know, in a sense, he's still an unfinished product or inexperienced product. And people use the word system quarterback like it was a bad thing. You know, we've had this discussion any number of times. You know, many of the great quarterbacks of all time have been system quarterbacks. I always argue Peyton Manning was a system quarterback. It was just his own system, you know, but they basically, the Colts ran about three running plays and the rest, you know, which were all the same, you know, a draw, sweep left, sweep right. And Manning ran the passing offense the way that he wanted to run it. And Tom Brady is the greatest system quarterback ever, because he could adjust the systems game by game, you know, within game, year by year, depending on what Belichick had, you know, had conceived up. And, you know,
in this era, others, Mike, with Graham, that, in this era with Lamar, Mahomes, Allen, is it more those kind of players, those simple but effective players like Purdy, going to become more and more maligned because of the stark contrast?
Yeah, and the problem with Purdy is he doesn't look like a star quarterback. You know, he's not Joe Burrow or Justin Herbert, you know, tall, good arm. He's obviously not Lamar, you know, or another run quarter. He's not even Jared Goff in that sense of that, you know, having the big arm. He looks kind of unassuming. He looks more like Drew Brees, but he doesn't play like Drew Brees. He actually plays like a guy with more downfield. So it's hard to come up with a personality for him. You know, and he should be like Pretty Purdy, like Bernard Purdy, the drummer, you know, or something like that, where he could build an image. And
Mike, they call his agent with that. They're going to love that.
I'm not sure why he's gotten off to such bad starts in the last, but I think part of it is a natural thing because the teams and defenses that they're playing have been better. And Detroit is an anomaly because they fell so far behind so early. And so therefore you're taken out of your normal rhythm. You know, even the scripted plays kind of have to go.
Yeah. It is interesting. The optics do work against him for sure. And to your point a minute ago, he's still really young. I mean, he's you know, I think this is, understated here, that it's an extraordinary return given where he's got. I mean, he could have been back-to-back Super Bowls if he hadn't had the injury last year, and here he is again. We'll look ahead in a minute. Just looking ahead for the Lions, there's, as I said, a lot of optimism about their future, but at the same time, is there a sense that this was the shot, this was the moment?
Well, possibly, because things broke for them well in the postseason. And obviously Green Bay is going to be a better team in their division this year. I mean, we kind of know that already. We don't know it, but we're assuming that they will build on the last six games of this season, you know, and be much better. But they're a young team in a lot of ways. They had a very good draft. And they don't have... They have a great offensive line, which if they can keep together will be good. They don't have any other, you know, massive needs. They said they probably need help in the secondary. They could probably use a second pass rusher. That would probably be their primary building block, someone up to go opposite what's his name, as
Hutchinson.
the as the designated Russian. They could probably use another linebacker, but nothing awesome there that they need. They need to fill things out. And Gibbs, Laporta, a couple of great rookie seasons from them, and Goff. Goff is Goff. I mean, I saw a stat when he was rushed. When he was under pressure, he was 0 for 8 in that game. The idea is to keep him from too many of those pressure situations. And I wouldn't make more of it than you actually need to. So yeah, I think Detroit's got a pretty good future. The biggest worry for me is that I think they're going to
Lose Ben
lose Ben
Johnson.
Johnson. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a hard thing to replace. I mean, you notice Philadelphia just signed Kellen Moore as their offensive coordinator. I don't think that is necessarily going to be a fix-it for Philadelphia, but it'll depend on how he and Sirianni kind of merge together offensively.
How big, I mean, Johnson is last season as well, of course, was a real darling of the media and observers, and a lot of people thought he'd get a head coaching gig last time out, and he sort of cemented that position evidently with the run that the Lions have had. How instrumental is he in this specific makeup as well? If we extend what we were saying about Campbell and the type of coach he is it a logistical structure of coaching that relies even more on coordinators than other setups? So it's an even
Yeah,
bigger message.
and I think he. You remember how they started? What was it? Was Anthony Lynn was the offensive coordinator, and then Campbell took over the play calling in the last half of his first season, and then they made Ben Johnson the offensive coordinator, and he had a great season last year. And you didn't see it so much in this game. I'm not sure why they got away from. I think trying to protect the run, trying to protect the lead, and still be the aggressive team that they want to be was a problem for them. But certainly in the week before, his play calling was super against the Packers. He really was picking them apart as the game went along. And I think that's going to be a bit hard for them to replace. How well he does, I'm assuming Washington is where he winds up, which seems to be the hot rumor. Whether he becomes his own offensive coordinator. What he does, I don't know. How he becomes a head coach, I don't know. But he's certainly a great offensive coordinator. And I think that's going to be the hardest thing for Detroit to replace, because I think Goff needs a really good offensive coordinator who understands what he does really well and can make the best of that.
Just staying on a bit of a tangent, but on the coaching tip, I've got to get your perspective on Belichick, Mike, because it looks like he's not going to get a gig, right? Assuming Johnson is
I would
in.
assume not, yeah, unless he goes to Wesleyan as the defensive coordinator or something.
Will you join his staff if he does? The where does that leave him? Is there any way back for Belichick? As in, is it conceivable that he sits out a year and then gets a gig, what, in 2025? I
Funny,
mean,
funny, I wrote about that as well, because Marv Levy said a few weeks ago when the when Carroll and Bill and Nick Saban all retired, he retired at 71, and Wilson, the owner of the Bills, tried to stop him from retiring, but they'd had a not so great year, and he thought he should step down. And Ralph Wilson, of course, was like 10 years older than Marv, so of course he'd
Of
want him to
course,
stay around.
he's fine to carry on,
But he then wanted to come back, he said. He got through the first year okay, and the second year he got really antsy. But at that point, when he started like putting feelers out, he would have been, I think, by the time the next season had started, he would have been 74, and no one was going to hire a 74-year-old head coach. And I think Bill will probably come up. He'll have one more year if he wants to. I'd love to see him in the booth. I think he'd be great. Or
That could
certainly in
go
one of
either way,
those.
frankly.
Can you imagine one of those round tables things, where if the guys try to clown with him and like yell
Or
over
they
him
will
and
have to do
stuff like
the
that.
one line before halftime. That would be great. You know what, Mike? This listening to you then, I could run for president. I mean,
No, we don't want Bill to run for president, because Bill is not unsurprisingly a very conservative guy, I
oh,
think.
okay. We don't want
So
that.
basically we
Okay.
don't want Bill for
Right kind of age
president.
bracket, but yeah, Bill.
Yeah, I also don't want Matt I don't want Matt Patricia as Secretary of Defense.
Of course, he's Secretary of Defense. Who's his VP running mate? He'd have to get a go for the youth. It'd be McDaniels. Of course, it'd be McDaniels, wouldn't he? He'd bring the South with him. Okay. Let's talk the brilliance of, well, I was going to say the brilliance of Mahomes and Kelce, but the brilliance of Spags is the big story, right?
That is the big story. Although we could segue from Bill to Andy Reid, because now Andy's only 65 now. He's younger than Bill, but they were kind of running parallel when he was in Philadelphia. And Andy has, like Bill, produced consistently good teams, although he was never able to win the big game until he got Patrick Mahomes, which people kind of ignore when they talk about the Belichick-Brady relationship. But I think what is important here is that Andy hired Steve Spagnuolo. Spags is to Andy what Bill was to Bill Parcells, I think. Mm. That important. And I'm not sure if Spags is the greatest defensive coordinator in the league. Obviously, after the game, the first game yesterday, he was the greatest defensive coordinator who'd ever lived. Mm-hmm. But that will only last until the next hot take comes along. But he's certainly, in this century, the best game planning, the guy you would want for a single game. You know, he's come up with some tremendous game plans and ways to stop teams from doing what they want to do.
And formidable offenses as well. I mean, you know, this was the key, I guess. And you hear some of the Ravens players after the game last night talking, obviously, about the pressure, and they bring in the blitz more than they expected. That, you know, a lot of the players, or a number of the players, you know, were saying the same thing. We didn't anticipate this. We didn't see this coming, which was, I thought, a fascinating response.
Yeah, and he sent them a lot, you know. And in the fourth quarter, it was really funny because partly I think it was tiredness, but partly it was they were desperate to keep Lamar controlled. So the line, it looked like arena football or sumo wrestling. It was like they were all paired up and dancing, you know, and the defensive linemen were just standing there, like waiting to see if Lamar would break the pocket or not. And when he was sending pressure from linebackers and secondary quite a bit, which Baltimore also did when they, you know, Mole got the first sack of Mahomes. But it looked like in the first quarter, it was going to be a back and forth NBA style shootout like the NFL wants, and it really turned into a, you know, baller knocker, you know, it turned into a real tough fight.
The over looked like a lock after the first 7 minutes, and then just crashed.
Yeah, exactly. And to me, the interesting thing was that Andy really resisted. You know, you talk about a game manager. Patrick Mahomes was a brilliant game manager in this game.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, he kept plays alive. But Andy resisted that temptation to start throwing the ball, whipping the ball downfield.
Yeah.
They kept running. Even when the lead had dropped, you know, to seven, they kept running the ball and working the clock, you know, confident, I think, that the defense was going to be able to keep Baltimore in control, and they came very close to not keeping them in control. You know, obviously Zay Flowers' fumble was kind of the turnaround play there, but you know, the Ravens were being pure hardball, I think, at times. You know, the penalty for knocking Smith over, and both teams were very, very physical. There were a lot of uncalled penalties, and there were a few badly called ones as well. The first hold on Smith, I don't even know if his hands were on the guy. He was all helmet and shoulder. There was
What do you make of the Zay Flowers after the catch for unsportsmanlike conduct?
For taunting?
Yeah, for taunting.
I think the key thing there, which in my mind was enough to draw the flag, although Gino Steratore seemed to think that the key thing was the standing over him and spinning the ball. But I thought it was him pushing him back down as he started to get up, you know, kind of pushing him back onto the floor. And to me, that was That was the flag. I don't mind guys drawing after a play.
Yeah.
If you that doesn't bother me
And
at
it is
all. But
inconsistent because, yeah, you've got, the classic, and Kelsey did this a number of times, the first down. I mean, if that's provocative, and but yeah, it's fine, it happens. But I guess it was the duality of that he
yeah,
doubled
man,
down on two things.
I think Kelsey was drawing all the time,
Yeah.
and he eventually he drew the penalty on Van Noy, and then
That's right.
and laughed at him.
Exactly. Yeah.
But there was one where Justice Hill, Chris Jones was being held actually in a pass rush when Lamar was throwing from the end zone, and Hill missed a block, and he was going down, and he swung his legs to trip Chris Jones, and that's an egregious foul in the NFL, and no one, the referee is back there in perfect view of it, and didn't bother to call it. But I just thought that Baltimore, for some reason, went away from the run, and not
Yeah.
because Kansas City was stuffing the run. On that first drive when they scored a touchdown, Gus had the first play of the game. Gus had like a 10-yard
And that was
run.
pretty much all he had. I mean, God, in the first half, I was looking at the
He only
first half
carried the ball
stats.
three times.
Three times. So what went wrong there? Why did they go away from the run so markedly?
That I cannot answer because I don't think I don't I can't imagine they thought they couldn't run the ball against the Chiefs. I
Yeah.
can't imagine it. And I don't know if they thought Lamar was going to run more himself. They didn't call so many. I thought they'd come out in the second half and play like they had in the second half
The
the
Green
week
Bay game.
before
Yeah. Yeah.
when they were down with short drops, quick slants, Lamar designed runs, and play a more ball control game. But really, their most valuable player, almost apart from maybe Hamilton, was Jordan Stout, because his punting kept the Chiefs pinned down for the most part, and the Chiefs made a lot of third downs, kept a lot of drives alive, and used an awful lot of clock. So take away the fumble, the Snead that Snead forced on the goal line.
What a play. And Flowers was inconsolable. But I mean, it was interesting. Harbaugh came out in defense of him afterwards and said, we asked the players to do this. We asked him to dive. He did everything we'd expect him to do, the dive with two hands in that situation. So it wasn't on Flowers, but Snead was, I mean, it was genius from him.
It was genius play. It was a brilliant play to think, to see it and think and execute it. Danny Woodhead tweeted, what Bill always says is don't stretch on third down, only stretch on fourth down when you're at the goal
Interesting.
line. Only on fourth down. I can kind of agree with that. And Baltimore took, they took some bad penalties in a game that was pretty like loosely called, but they had 8 for 95, and Kansas City had 3 for 30.
How
And
was Kelsey getting away with it? As in Mahomes and Kelsey getting away with it so routinely.
well,
How were the Ravens just weren't getting what this is brilliant Ravens
funny,
D weren't getting wise to it.
Kelsey looked like Gronk the year when he came, like his last year in New England, when it took him like three steps to get up to top speed, but I think what it was when they man covered him with Hamilton. Hamilton had to at least leave some space in case Kelsey was going to go deeper. And the touchdown catch, for example, Hamilton held him. They then quote unquote hand fought, as you say, and Kelsey kind of pulled himself free. But still, Mahomes had to put the ball low and to the outside in order to get it past Hamilton. And I think they were willing to settle for those 6, 7 yard gains. That was the game. I'm convinced that was the game plan, was that they were going to consistently go downfield, getting 6 or 7 on a first down and making the next two downs manageable so they could kill the clock and keep Lamar off the field for as much time as possible. And knowing, I think, and trusting, would be the better word, that their defense was going to, what was the final time of possession? First half, it was over 20 minutes. So it was over 2-1 to the Chiefs. And for the game, it was 37 and a half to 22 and a half. They can't beat you if they're not on the field. And though the other thing that's quite a mistake is everybody says the zero blitz. We knew the zero blitz was coming on the second pass to MVS, you know, the one that ended the game. But it actually wasn't a zero blitz. When you watch the play, they showed blitz, and then Hamilton, for example, dropped back into coverage. The thing that didn't happen was that, even though it wasn't officially a zero blitz, nobody, MVS was still single covered. So the route that they were going to go to was the one that they could go to. So everything worked out fine for them, because they knew the blitz was coming, and Baltimore showed that blitz, but didn't actually do it, but couldn't get back into any kind of shell coverage on it. And I think the greatest stat in the game for me was Pacheco ran 24 times for 66 yards, 68 yards, less than 3 yards a carry. Andy Reid let a guy run 24 times, averaging less than 3 yards a carry.
Right.
You know, normally, Andy Reid gets bored with the run game after three carries, where he gains 7 yards a carry.
That's what I mean
about sticking to this game plan. To keep
and
possession.
It's a great point you make, because we've talked about the flaws in this Chiefs offense all season long, and the defense. So many times we've said how the defense has got him out of Dodge and got him out of jail, and in the playoffs in particular, obviously Kelsey's reappeared and has had a fantastic playoffs. Pacheco has been instrumental, and Rashe Rice.
I wonder why.
And that try, yeah, I wonder what might have happened. And that trifecta, it feels like, certainly it is enough to get him to the big show. Is it going to be enough, though, going forwards if the 49ers defense is on it? Or are they going to need, as I've been talking to you about a number of times, expecting this, that needed this needs to happen earlier on in the playoffs, that Valdes-Scantling, Mecole Hardman, and these second tier guys are going to have to step up? Or is that exactly what we saw? Is the Valdes-Scantling completion to kill the game exactly all they need?
Yeah, I think you can get 75,000 to 1 on Kadarius Toney as the Super Bowl MVP.
You've been listening to Edge Rush, Mike. I called it last week. I'm putting a fiver. What? Do you see why it was a scratch as well? It was an injury and personal reasons.
His wife had a baby.
Oh, is that right? I didn't see that came out.
Yeah.
Okay,
that was the first. That was the.
Oh,
first
he's definitely
reasons.
Super Bowl MVP now. Then I mean, it's even more of a look.
yeah, it's going to be a challenge because. You want to be able to, first off, are they going to turn the lights down in the stadium and then bring out some ex-Chiefs star to G up the crowd, or maybe they bring out the Ray Lewis, or Ed Reed or someone. I thought that was pretty tacky.
What with Suggs bringing out Suggs?
Yeah, when they brought out Suggs.
Yeah,
Suggs, yeah.
Suggs looks like he could still play though, right? I mean, the way
I'll bet he could.
They should have probably put him in. Suggs are taking care of Kelsey.
Yeah. But it'll be a challenge. It'll be a challenge for the Niners defense. But it's something that they balance out well against it. They're strong inside. So if they can get that inside pressure from Hargreave and from Armstead, that's how you disrupt the play action movement from the running game, and Warner and Greenlaw can cover tight ends, so they can basically use the two linebackers as well as their secondary to cover. And I'm not sure how, the secondary, the deep secondary for them is cornerbacks are not that great. And I think another interesting thing is how aggressive the Kansas City secondary is in terms of getting their hands on you and controlling you. And there were a couple of fairly blatant uncalled holds and interferences, but you have no way of predicting how the officiating crew is going to react to that or when, and think back to last year when it was a hold, a perfectly legitimate holding call, but one that had not been called earlier in the game when the same basic thing happened on Bradbury, which was kind of the defining play of the game. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a good matchup. And I think back to Houston, which was, I think, the last Super Bowl I did on site live, because I think the next one was a COVID Super Bowl.
You did Miami on site, didn't you?
Was that 2020?
Yeah,
It
no,
was 2020.
2020.
So that wasn't, no, Miami was after that. Yeah, because that was a COVID. That was a COVID
Pre-COVID, just
show
before
too.
COVID. No, that
But
was
that,
just before COVID landed. Yeah, it was Feb 2020.
And but I always thought that the Chiefs got a bit jobbed. The Niners got a bit jobbed in that game. There were
Yeah.
a couple of uncalled plays or badly called plays that hurt them. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I think it'll be another good matchup.
Well, we're going to break that down, you and I, in a lot more detail. That show will drop next Monday. We're going to record that and drop it next Monday. Iron Mike Super Bowl preview coming your way. We've got J Bell in the house as well. He is locking in. I think J Bell's Wednesdays is rocking up. We've got a lot of other special guests coming over the next fortnight. Don't forget, we'll be out in Vegas, of course, for the big game. And Propo and I will drop an episode. Well, we're trying to establish whether we're going to do it in stadium or the morning
Which
after the night before.
casino is going to let you do it next to a slot
The
machine?
Sahara in Vegas is where we're heading. But let's get, because we've got such a great mailbag, I want to get into as many of these as I
Yeah,
can.
let's do so.
Let's do it. Well, Andy Reid, and we're talking about Belichick, and maybe that's all she wrote for Bill. Interesting question in terms of Andy Reid and the Super Bowl from Adam. If cuddly Andy Reid, I think you ever get that applied to you, Iron Mike?
Andy,
Cuddly Iron Mike? You ever had that?
no, I haven't really rarely been described as
Cuddly
cuddly.
is probably one of the least Iron Mike word I'd use. If cuddly Andy Reid wins his third ring, do you think there's a chance he may retire?
Don't think so, because kind of like Belichick, I think Andy loves to coach. I wrote another piece for Gridiron Magazine. I can't remember offhand
Get you
whether it
into the
was
writing.
earlier this year or at the end of last season, but about whether the Chiefs were a dynasty,
Yeah.
if we could define the Chiefs as a dynasty. And I said basically I thought they needed another Super Bowl win for that. So they're in a position to do that because Andy's got them there consistently. He's won the big one with Mahomes, and he's shown, basically that he's very good at team building, team constructing. And so, I think he's about to vault himself into the position where why should he bother to retire? He's lucky in that he's younger than Bill, so he hasn't got stuck in his ways. Bill had Brady all that time, and he always knew, all things were possible. And Andy's got the same thing with
Sure.
Mahomes. And people forget Andy's last 2 years in Philadelphia, he had almost the same record that Bill had his last 2 years in New England.
Right.
It was only like one game difference,
Reinvented himself. I get, yeah,
but
as you said, a few
he was
years on him.
young
Yeah,
enough to get
sure. To get
rehired.
a regroup. Mahomes is on pace, Brady pace, isn't he? If he wins this one, in terms of 3-7 or whatever the math, 3-8.
And I think you can argue that Mahomes is a system quarterback, given what they've done the second half of the year, where Andy finally said, look, we can't keep pretending that we've got Tyreek Hill, or another or Marquez or Juju or someone like that, another deep threat. We're going to have to play a more ball control kind of game, and that's what they did, and they made it work.
I don't know if you're just playing with me, Carson, because I've been pushing that Kadarius Toney MVP line for a while, and I think it's going to happen. I can 145 yards, two touchdowns. You heard it here first, kids. Well, we talked about the concept of Kansas City as a dynasty. I guess the other thing to consider with that question of whether Reed steps down is they're going to have a number of starters that are free agents going into the offseason. Obviously, they'll be able to re-up a few of them, right? But there is going to be a fair amount of flux with this Kansas City side. So I just think, though, that if you, God, when you've got Mahomes and when you've got enough of that core, you can retain enough of that core, what for one more roll of the dice, you're going to want to do. It's what makes them the coaches that they are in the first place. This must be so hard to walk away from that. Walk away if everybody's leaving, you got to rebuild, you think, forget that. Like McVay was thinking about in LA, right? Was thinking, this might, and
That's
he's
a very
27.
good analogy, I think, because McVay's got the same thing as Andy Reid. It's like he wants to be a football coach.
Can't just
What else?
what
Andy's
else are you
not
going
going
to
to
do?
be. I wasn't really joking about Bill going into a booth somewhere because he's a great analyst. And if you watch that NFL 100 show, Bill. He knows everything. There's this wonderful one with Ed Reed, And they're talking about Ed Reed fooled Peyton Manning on one play, and Chris Collinsworth is doing it. And he says, you know, and they had that root combo, and Bill just turns around and says, that wasn't a root combo, it was an out. It was a jet or a go. Yeah, it was a go, is the word he used. And Ed Reed's, oh yeah, it was a go. You know, he knows what he's talking about. And he said, it was the best play I've ever seen a safety make, you know, and it was brilliant, because what happened is Peyton pump fakes to the left. And looks, and Ed Reed's in the middle of the field. He's turned the other way, because after the fake, he knows he's coming down the middle. So Peyton then goes and throws to where he pumped fake, and Reed is there. And Reed literally opened his body to the one side and then just turned and kept running. And because he said what neither of the coaches had realized. He said, I saw when Peyton pumps left, he throws left. Mm. He pumps left, goes back to the middle, like he's going to throw there, but the throw is going to go there.
Always going to go
and
that
I
way.
I was watching the film and I knew it. And Collinsworth gets into one of those. So you knew that he knew that you knew that he knew.
Yeah.
But Bill is so, he's really good and funny. But Andy, I don't think would do that.
Andy wouldn't like that. He wouldn't like that shtick. Oh, can we get Belichick on a Skip Bayless type show? Wouldn't it be great though? The most ridiculous shouting heads format you can think of. Just parachute Belichick in there. It would be compelling.
Make him stand up and make him wear, you know, one of those stupid outfits with big sneakers and tight jeans and a sport coat and stuff, and, you know, make him stand by the screen and then have everybody screaming
ever around him, at him, in between.
Put him in a headlock, you know.
Yeah, but he's
I
just
love this guy
still just rub his head. Oh god, brilliant. Okay,
Smokey, question
what,
for the mailbag.
Yeah.
Who would you rather be dating, Taylor Swift or Kylie Kelsey?
Oh, Kylie Kelsey. God, that's a tough call. I'm a gentleman and a scholar on mic, so I'm not going to answer that, but I'm sure you have an answer for your own question.
Kylie Kelsey.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, very attractive woman. Mm. Seems to be like sparkly, but she's talking about Jason going to Buffalo. You know, to see the Chiefs game, and he's out there with the Bills fans. You know,
the legendary photo, of course,
in the tailgating, and she says, "Oh, but he didn't get to jump off and break a table." You know, he really wanted. I felt so sorry for him. He didn't get his chance to jump. I want a wife who wants me to jump,
to jump off
and
break
a table.
The benchmark of a good night. If that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
The knights and
I
dud.
Thought, boy, is that great, you know?
Let's stop with all the Taylor Swift hate, though, for the love of God. I love the fact that this winds up a lot of middle American football.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I mean, I don't mind. It's fine, you know? It's great. And there's that thing where, like, the Beckham, she seems to be dressing him now. And, you know, but I think, you know,
so
I think
what?
That's
Why
fine.
Not? They're
if they're,
happy
if they're happy.
Shit.
That Did you
yeah.
see that big smoochie, the big smoochie they had?
I didn't. I missed
on
the
the
big
field?
smoochie. Oh, no, I
yeah,
missed the
my
big smoochie.
Reaction was, how did she get on the field?
Yeah, sure. Well, one of the first things I saw breaking was not this brilliant defensive performance from Spags and Co. It wasn't Mahomes and Kelsey connecting in the way they have. It wasn't even the supporting cast like Valis. It was, how is Taylor Swift going to make it from her gig in Tokyo to the Super Bowl? I mean, there was 1,000 words dedicated to that Iron Mike. Maybe we should do more of that on this show, quite frankly. But I am.
Did
I
it
like,
give the root? Did it give the possible roots?
Should have shown the roots. Hey, that's some good YouTube content for us. We'll push that out on our YouTube channel. The NC Show. Good to see so many of you following us on that.
All roads lead to Vegas, right?
Oh, well, that's a very fair point in so many ways, Iron Mike. I know you're a big fan.
Where is she playing? Where is she playing? Did it say?
Where's she playing? In Tokyo. In Tokyo.
In Tokyo. Oh,
Tokyo,
easy
yeah.
peasy. Yeah.
That's easy, is it? That's an easy. Okay,
yeah.
I think
Tokyo, LA, just Tokyo, LA, and then drive.
Well, she's probably got Tokyo to LA and then drive. You get a chopper.
Chopper.
You get the chopper. You gotta get to Vegas on the chopper. You gotta do that. All right, one more for the road. We will go to. Why don't we go to? Let's have a good. I'm just looking at these questions. Oh, can clean this up. Here we go. Okay.
Yeah.
Last one.
I was just laughing. I was just laughing because I'll be Cass Young for the Super Bowl, you know. So that's,
oh yeah, of course you will. Yeah,
that's my big gig, guys. But you know, Taylor could probably get a gig at a bar in Tokyo that show me the Super Bowl.
Fair point. I mean, you couldn't find one in Madrid. I bet Taylor could. I'd back her to find a bar anywhere to show her the NFL. Here we go. We're going to go a little bit tangential, but it's a goodie. It's an oldie, but a goodie. Those of you who watched us back in the day will like this one. Last word to Rob Jones. Hey, Rob. Mike, why do running backs never get high anymore and leap the pile on very short yardage?
Well, yeah, the tush push is kind of, you know, it's
Negated it,
really
yeah.
only big quarterbacks, tall quarterbacks who do the sort of, and they don't even jump. They sort of just kind of lean or reach, try to reach over like that. I think that's a very good question. You know, maybe they're not practicing getting high the way that Ricky Williams used to, or you know, or maybe they're more short guys with a low center of gravity who don't have big, you know, a lot of air underneath them. But it certainly still works. And some of the greatest plays in football, NFL history, have been, you know, a couple of, you know, stops. I'm trying to think of the linebacker for the Giants who, you know, did the flying stop on the flying. I wish I'd seen this. I could have looked it up, but see, it was Rick. Was it Reasons? I think was the linebacker, and you know, they met in midair, basically, kind of like Superman meeting some villain. You know, like crashing head on head while flying, and you lose that again. I don't know. There, I can't think of a reason, but now that the question's been raised, I can't think of anybody really leaping over a pile much in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, well, hey, that's one for you to ponder, Iron Mike, because you can be back next Monday. We're going to, as I say, have a Super Bowl preview with the big man, so you can think about that. Aaron Jones did it.
Yeah, Aaron Jones did it. Did it this season and backwards. I mean, he did a kind of, you know, fly it up and then come down on his back like he was taking a bump in the WWE.
You see, that is brave. But Aaron Jones, I can buy it. Brilliant stuff. At Carlton Sports is how you follow the big man on Twitter. You got work to do, Iron Mike. You got shows to make. You got to get back to the grind.
Two games tonight, early morning time. Coming in from Korea, semifinals.
Go
both men's
well.
Men's and women's.
The end is in sight. Then go well, mate. Enjoy that. Enjoy the rest of that gig and safe travels back. Iron Mike will be back on the show next Monday, as I say, for the Super Bowl preview. At Carlton Sports is how you follow him. On X and of course patreon.com/MikeCarlsonFMTE for the stylings, deep divings and profilings of the big man. So look after yourself, bud.
You too, Ray.
Sports Social Podcast Network.